You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is Gilbert Gottfried, and I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions with our special guest, Gary Gerani.
Hello there.
Hey, I'm going to stop you guys. Why don't we do, hey, Frank, why don't we have Gilbert do like a fun horror movie intro for this one? Why don't you do a, like a Karloff voice or Maria Uspenskaya to introduce the episode, because this is our Halloween show. Do the same thing.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Even a man who is pure at heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright. This is part two of Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions.
Lovely.
Wow.
That was all, that was exactly what I had in mind.
Fantastic.
Nice job. Nice job, Maria. We're doing part two here with Gary Gerani.
Maria Uspenskaya, when she did The Wolfman, probably thought of it as like doing porn. It's like, this is like...
This grand lady of the stage, right?
Yeah, serious stage actress.
She was there with the Stanislavski method.
Well, you got to look at it this way. There she was with her old, you know, buddy Claude Rains, and, you know, they did a couple other movies together, including, what's the movie where Ronald Reagan loses his legs?
King's Row?
Yeah, they're both in that. So, you know, you could make horror movies and still do your important films if you were good enough, and they were brilliant.
And she was in that movie where Edward G. Robinson, I think he discovers, he's the one who finds the...
Dr. Ehrlich's magic book.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, and you'll see her. The Rains came. She's the old lady there.
Yeah,
the
career.
The Rains Ranch Report. Yeah. I mean, she was very respected.
I think she was an acting teacher too. I think young actors. She took a lot of young actors. By the way, I'm going to reintroduce you.
Oh, okay.
Gilbert got lost in his Maria Uspenskaya.
As well, he should.
Gary, author and pop culture expert and trading card king, Gary Gerani is back with us.
And one time, I heard from Chico's daughter, I had spoken to, and she was taking lessons from Maria Uspenskaya.
There you go.
I'm trying to handle
that. He was probably trying to nail her.
And it's like,
oh God,
Chico asked her out to dinner.
This is perfect.
It was Chico and Maria Uspenskaya having dinner. I can't believe what that... Why this was
Maxine
wasn't
told
filmed.
You this?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
The brain cells boggle
so
at that one,
bizarre.
I have to say.
Gary,
yes.
We talked in the last episode.
Oh, Gary.
We talked in the last episode about Dracula, Frankenstein, the Mummy, and the Invisible Man, and we went all over the place, but we're trying to do these in chronological order.
No problem.
And everybody who listens to this show knows that Gilbert loves Universal Monster Talk.
Lon Chaney Jr. especially.
So we'll get to him.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But since we're going in order, and we left off with The Invisible Man in 33, let's talk once again about a movie we love to talk about on this show, and that is the very weird and very kinky Black Cat.
Yeah.
Which may be the strangest movie to ever come out of Hollywood.
It's like,
arguably.
The more you watch it, the less you understand it.
Yeah,
that's a great description of that.
It makes less and less sense,
and it's more and more satisfying.
Yes,
that's what's so weird.
Usually, when a movie, when something doesn't make sense, I get annoyed.
With the black cat, nothing makes sense, and it just makes it better.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And that's interesting because that's a Universal horror movie. That really doesn't have a monster.
No monster.
Yeah. And yet, it's just as well-loved and well-appreciated as the other classics because it is so well done. Karloff has an incredible part
in
that.
You put it in the book.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great movie. Yeah. And I love the fact that his castle is this high-tech, brilliantly designed place.
It's Art Deco.
Yes.
And there's a digital clock in the movie.
He's obsessed with the digital clock. Yes.
So, because every other film back then was like in a castle.
Right.
Or something. And now you see this like really fancy house.
You know what that reminds me of? Frank Capra's Lost Horizon.
Yeah.
When they get to Shangri-La, it's not an old-looking thing. Yeah. It's a modern-looking
thing. That's a beautiful-looking movie.
Yeah.
It's a shame that they lost a half a reel or
what happened on that movie is they've lost the original negative. So through all the decades now, they've been trying to restore it. It keeps looking better over the years.
When you see it now in theaters, in revivals, you see it with stills. Or even when DCM pulls it up. That's a beautiful movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is.
Okay, Black Cat, the first of the Karloff Lugosi team-ups. Universal, I don't know this, but they must have been falling all over themselves to try to put the two of these guys in a movie together. Obviously, they were the two big stars, very loosely, if at all, based on the Poe story. As if no real connection to it.
And when they do hit upon it, a black cat shows up, he gets scared, and it's never touched on again.
Two references, I think.
They have to justify the title.
Exactly.
Well, Lugosi throws the scissors
That's a great moment,
black
too.
Black cat. You list it in the book, you describe it in the book as a loopy, tongue-in-cheek tale of revenge, perverted love, and devil worship.
Yeah,
that sums it up.
There's necrophilia.
Human sacrifice.
Right, it's Lugosi's daughter. Right.
Well, it's pre-code.
Exactly.
So they were able to get away with this stuff.
We'll play a little game. A game of death, if you'd like.
Well, I got a good one.
Very
for
good.
You.
Yeah. And he accentuates that lisp.
In they're playing that game, that little chess game, right? And then finally, checkmate, right? That key moment. But the studio didn't realize this. They thought for a second, a lot of people may not know that checkmate means he wins. So a voice is dubbed in saying, "You lose, Vitus."
Isn't it Ulmer's voice?
It's just a voice. I don't know whose voice.
I know it's Ulmer.
I think it's the director. You know, even as a kid, I said, that's not Karloff's voice. But they were so concerned, people didn't realize that checkmate meant you lost. So they had to throw that line in.
Yeah. Tell listeners briefly the plot, if you can sum it up.
there's no way.
No one should even.
And I heard it was based on a true story. I mean, very loosely.
I think the cultist character based on Aleister Crowley? The famous cultist and paganist?
That's a good point.
I believe it is.
And there were these prisons, these army prisons, that was based on.
So there was that. It did have that element of reality that was underneath all the insanity that was going on there. It's a little suggestion of a subtext there. But again, it's David Manners again, right?
David Manners again.
There is a scene.
He's everywhere.
where they're on the train car, and David Manners is listening to Lugosi, and I go, this acting is ahead of time, you know?
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because his wife is asleep, and Lugosi sees his sleeping wife, and he almost like wants to touch this young lady in a very nice way.
Yeah.
And he's looking at him, and he starts to explain how he lost his own wife and all that. And Manners is just there.
He's just listening.
But it is, as you say, ahead of its time because he's not over-emoting.
No.
He's just there shaking his head. It's a powerful moment.
That surprised me when I saw that because it's just, he's just listening.
Yeah. It's a powerful moment, too.
Yes, very.
And that's because you had Ulmer. You know, he was a very interesting director. Very, very strange guy would get those moments from the actors.
A very strange guy, from the research.
And he's made some of my favorite movies, too.
Well, Detour is a great movie.
Man from Planet X and all these other crazy
pictures.
Very strange
guy from what I've read.
I came back not to kill you, to kill your soul. Slow.
Look fast for John Carradine in The Black Cat.
John
plays an organist.
Oh,
very quickly.
Oh, my God.
Ulmer
right?
brought the German expressionism that you're talking about with the design. I read some very, very strange things about him. Now, if IMDb, you know about this, that he had an affair with the wife of an executive at Universal?
that I didn't know.
And he was blacklisted. Ulmer began an affair with Shirley Castle, who would eventually become his wife. However, at the time, Castle was married to Max Alexander, a Universal producer and the nephew of the powerful head of Universal, Carl Laemmle.
Don't crap where you eat.
Who did not look kindly on outsiders upsetting his family. She left her husband for Ulmer, and the ensuing scandal resulted in him being blackballed by all of the major studios.
That just goes to show you got to be careful.
How about that? Now, how about this one? This is from IMDb, too. Henry Cording, who plays the brutish...
That guy.
Kind
right?
of oh, yes.
The
yes.
strange, very disturbing,
yes,
disturbing
yes.
element is this weird manservant. Saved the life of actress Lucille Lund when he pulled her off the slab table after he found her bleeding from the mouth. According to Lund, Edgar Ulmer was a sadist who retaliated against her when she turned him down when he asked her to be his girlfriend. He left her hanging in a glass case equipped with wires while they all went to lunch.
Oh!
It is estimated she had been left there for an hour.
Oh!
Now, that adds... I bring this up because it adds an element of freakishness.
Yes!
To this...
Yeah, a little bit of real-life horror intruding on the movie.
Yeah, if this is true...
Either that or it could just be some juicy publicity, too.
Who knows? Anyway.
Well, I remember the most bullshit publicity to come out of the old movies... is, I forget the name of it. It was a real shitty low budget with Karloff and Lugosi. And Lugosi, they advertised, had been hypnotized by this great.
Oh, is yes. that Black Friday?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that looked like That's such
good, I like that one.
Bullshit.
That is gotta be bullshit.
Yeah.
It's like looking at the old press books where there's all this stuff. You know it's all made up crap.
Because, you know, it's supposed to be that he hypnotized them to be in a panic. Well, if he was in a panic and he was more comfortable with Hungarian, why is he screaming out in English? If in a panic, he'd be screaming out in Hungarian. He wouldn't be
they
able
even
to.
Put that scene in the trailer, by the way.
Yeah. I like The Raven, too, by the way, the follow-up. The Raven is
even loopier.
It's loopier.
It's like the Black Cat without the artfulness, but it's got its own...
It won't cause you sleepless weeks, though, like The Black
and,
Cat.
And they right. took Karloff's growl... out of Frankenstein and they put it in the Raven for no reason at all.
So we'll move on, but we will tell our listeners once again, and we've said it 100 times, watch The Black Cat.
Yes, we love
then,
The Black Cat.
And then email us. Moving on to 1935,
okay.
I think you know which one I'm going for here.
Quite an important one, I would say.
Quite an important one, and actually the highest ranking movie on in your book.
Oh, yes.
It came in at number 5.
Of all the Universal horror classics, that is The Citizen Kane.
It really is, and that's Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
The rare sequel that surpasses the original film.
And the original was damn good.
Yeah, the original's damn good.
But Bride of Frankenstein took things to a whole new level. You can have a contemporary young audience watch that movie, watch the climax where they're bringing the bride to life. The style of editing, it's like Star Wars. You know, it's so exciting, so creative, so fast.
Well, my theory about this is that Whale was given free rein. He was given a lot of creative license, and he took it.
Yeah. And it all
it's
worked.
It's a little about like the inmates running the asylum in 70s American cinema. It is crazy the chances that he took with this thing.
Yeah.
And then it got that whole crazy middle section with the miniature people. Yeah.
Which apparently Millie Vardy is in.
Oh, my God.
Did you know this?
Among the little people,
in the bottles.
That scumbag, he took work from me.
he took a job from Gilbert.
Dr. Pretorius, who
a great creation.
Just like Dr. Frankenstein had experimented with creating life. But instead of creating a human-sized artificial man, he created these little people that he put in jars.
And so, that was so like disturbing. Ernest Thesinger.
Yes.
And I heard, you know, him likes everybody in James Whale's pictures was gay.
Yes.
With the
yes.
exception of Carlo.
Although he was the one straight guy.
He was married to a lady.
But Ernest Thesinger used to, on his time off, he would knit. And he used to refer to himself as that knitting bitch.
Where did you come up with this?
I read that
somewhere. Now I'm learning something. That's
that
amazing.
That knitting bitch.
So Whale
Ernest Thesinger is another great. I mean, it's the Dr. Smith of his day when you think about it. The same kind of guy, right?
And then there's that part where Karloff shows up and he goes, "Friend." And he goes, "Well, I should certainly hope so."
I hope so. Have a cigar. It's
he was
only
the Dr. Smith. Yes, he was the Jonathan Harris of his
day. Yes, wasn't he?
You nailed that.
Jonathan Harris was a Jew from the Bronx.
There you go.
He invented that whole character.
So and that character saved the show because they did the original pilot without Dr. Smith.
Absolutely.
And it was rejected. They said, you gotta have some conflict in here.
Yes.
So they brought him in.
So Whale wanted no part of a sequel to Frankenstein. From what I understand.
Yeah, I mean, you could understand why they were afraid, because that kind of thing could go off the rails very, very easily. Instead, they wound up with certainly one of the greatest horror movies of all. Some people would say it's the best. It's certainly in the top five.
I'm reading that Uncle Carl was on vacation in Europe, and he basically wasn't watching what Whale was doing. And Whale basically had creative freedom.
What's amazing that they got away with
a lot.
Was the sacrilegious things.
That
so many. There's statues of Christ comparing the monster to Christ.
Well, absolutely. Because the monster was an outsider being persecuted. I don't know if you know, but originally, Karloff didn't want the monster to speak. He was really against that.
Yeah.
And that was Whale's idea, you know. And then it's kind of like Alfred Hitchcock not wanting music in the shower sequence of Psycho. He eventually realized, no, that really did make it into something. And the monster talking brought a whole new level to the character. And Karloff finally said, that really did make a difference.
In Son of Frankenstein, he already forgot how to talk.
Right, he's mute again.
Yeah.
It never made any sense to me.
That's kind of what the prototype of what the monster was going to be when Glenn Strange took it. Just kind of
a robot.
Automaton kind of a thing.
Well, Sarah did a DVD commentary. I guess it's on one of the Blu-rays. And she said that, that time has proven her father wrong.
Yeah. I remember her saying that.
Yeah, that he made it work when he spoke.
I'm sure that Karloff himself, after he gave that performance, probably like what Hitchcock said, incorrect suggestion, he realized that what he was saying, no, let's not do it, was wrong, and speaking was right for the monster.
It's a very kinky movie in ways, it's similar to The Black Cat, because it's kind of an outlier.
Here's my question to you guys on it. When the monster kidnaps Elizabeth, think of, Madeline Kahn, but no, this is the original Elizabeth. Yeah. And he brings her to that cave and he throws her down, whatever. And then you see his hand and he's looking at her and he's coming down on her. Just like that, and you dissolve away. Did he rape her?
It's a good question.
And for years, and if you look at that, it's, and then he goes, and his hand goes down and you dissolve to the next. Take a look at that the next time. No one can really say for sure, but I think that's implied.
Wow.
What do you know about rejected storylines that they didn't go with? Some story about a circus, about Frankenstein and his bride running away to a circus
The Bride.
I've never seen The Bride.
That's exactly right.
I've never seen The Bride. That's interesting.
And the girl from Flashdance.
Right.
The monster is killed by a lion in the circus. Have you heard this before? And there's one storyline that was rejected of Dr. Frankenstein murdering the monster with a death ray. Do you know,
there were always death rays popping up in these things.
Yes.
In the Mummy, I believe, he was going to be using a death ray originally. Also, the Mummy, we're talking about the similarities between the Mummy and Dracula. Originally, the Mummy was going to be in a coffin all day long, just like Dracula. It would be his sarcophagus, but it would pretty much amount to the same thing. So, you know, there's all these nutty ideas that they played with and sort of smart. But, you know, getting back to just the brilliance of The Bride of Frankenstein, among other things, there's so many great things in it. The music.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Franz Waxman, one of his greatest scores. And it wound up just like, this wasn't Franz Waxman, it was a different composer who did The Invisible Man. But both of those scores wound up being background music for the Flash Gordon serials, which as a kid I saw before these horror movies. And all of a sudden, oh my God, I know that music. But it's powerful, powerful stuff.
It's a great score. It's a great movie on so many levels.
And there's that part where the monster is crying with the old blind man, and the camera goes up to a lit-up figure of Christ on the cross.
There's a crucifix behind them.
Yeah.
And as
very
that
clear.
Scene is fading, it suddenly illuminates.
Yes.
And then if the whole scene is faded out, you still see the illuminated cross.
Yes.
Yeah. It sticks with you.
And Elsa got the question mark treatment in that one.
Because
Karloff was already Karloff!
And plus she played two roles because she was Mary Shelley in addition to playing the bride.
That's right. And good trivia. She is the only classic universal monster to never take a life.
There you go. Technically, right.
She's only on three minutes
and
of screen time.
You talk about, you were saying some ideas they were playing with that they never used. The bride briefly was going to be dealt with in Son of Frankenstein. When he goes to the old crumbled place, there was going to be the remains of the bride or something. They finally said, you know, let's just skip that. But they were going to do a little continuity with her.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
A little Colin Clive trivia for you, Gilbert, since you asked about him. He died 2 years later after the making of Bride of Frankenstein.
Wow.
Supposedly, again, we have to do a segment on this show called Truth or Bullshit, but his ashes sat in the basement of an L.A. funeral home for 40 years.
Oh,
my God.
Before they were discovered and...
Wow, how weird is that?
How weird is that?
Yeah, I heard he drank. He was old.
Yeah. And he had all kinds of diseases and things. I don't even remember anymore.
Troubled man.
Yeah, it wasn't a pretty picture.
But you're giving me my segue since you've brought up Son of Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about it.
Okay.
Yes, it did not make your top 100, but it's, as you say, bubbling beneath the surface.
It's got to be because...
It's under the ice.
I'm actually annoyed at myself that I somehow didn't squeeze it into the top 100 because it's a very, very good movie in its own way. And
you called it more conventional.
Oh, well, it is.
Yeah.
If you could look at Bride of Frankenstein, which is one of the reasons...
It's hard to top.
We love that movie because of how offbeat it is. Son is a little bit more straight in every way, less flaky, less funny.
The best part of that was Lugosi's performance is amazing.
Yeah, one,
absolutely. There are some people who say incorrectly, Karloff had all these different characters, and all Lugosi had was Dracula. No way.
Yeah.
Igor is just, in its own way, it's just as good as Dracula because he's doing the exact opposite.
Yes.
Instead of the cultivated, sophisticated, it's this whatever he is, this kind of slimy
It was both funny and eerie at the same time.
And sometimes even touching.
Yes.
And I guess it's in Ghost of Frankenstein where he's hoping to literally bond with the monster by going into his body and his brain was going to be in there and all that. So the relationship between Igor and the monster has had some people saying, was there more going on there? In later years, people have been talking about that.
Oh, well, there was a part in the movie that Karloff and Rathbone would crack up. And that's when Lugosi says of the monster, he does things for me.
He does things for me.
And they started cracking up.
Very interesting.
It's actually a very sinister line because, yes. What are those things that he would do for this creepy guy?
And
I hate to think they had a subtext that was inferring
in 1939.
Some, right. Yeah. But to me, I always just took it as this guy's a weird, wicked old guy, and he's got this monster at his disposal, and woo, which of course is what he uses him for, to get even
among
the people.
Sure. I like it. It's plenty atmospheric, and it's got a lot going for it. It makes me wonder what Whale would have done had he.
It was a different time.
On.
You're talking about the difference between 1935 and 1939. And the movies were growing up. Hollywood was getting very, very straight and serious with all this stuff. Son of Frankenstein was actually going to be a Technicolor movie.
Yes,
if you look at that film, look at the way the monster looks. He's not in his usual dull jacket.
Right,
he's got this furry outfit, which was a brownish
and
red.
I heard Karloff hated that.
Well, he didn't like things that got away from the iconic look of the monster.
Well, wasn't he worried generally that the monster was going to be taken in the wrong direction, that he was just going to become a killing machine and
he was right.
And lose his...
You know, I mean, it was such a tricky part
qualities.
To begin with, right? And inevitably, it was so easy for it to become a parody of itself. And then he just became a big stuntman walking around in usually the third act of those movies.
Well, once it's Glenn Strange.
Yeah.
And Glenn Strange had
a good face.
Yeah, but it's...
But it's... They weren't really doing justice to the monster.
They
anymore.
Lose the sympathy and the magic of the character and the childlike qualities, that everything that Karloff...
Yeah, they were going in a different direction. What can one say? You know, the 40s were different than the 30s. Son of Frankenstein launched the second wave of Universal classic
horror. And when you see Lugosi in there, you see what a great stage actor he must have been.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And people like to say, oh, how hammy he is. Yeah. But no, he's really... making that real.
Yes.
As weird as that character is. Ah, and we'll get to this in a second, I'm sure. He's equally good in The Wolfman.
Yes.
As the gypsy.
Yes.
It's a small part.
Right.
But there he is showing up and giving another memorable moment that we could talk about.
Yeah. Well, I read that they were making the script up as they went along with Son of Frankenstein, and they kept expanding Lugosi's part. Apparently they were upset that Universal was lowballing him on the money, and they were trying to give him more to do.
Yeah.
Universal had very little respect for Lugosi. Now, some people say, well, after all he can play is Dracula. Number one, that's not true. And also, excuse me, they did a lot of other movies with the Dracula character and didn't use Lugosi, who is Dracula, right? So Universal, I think, began to think of him as kind of a melodramatic, kind of cornball guy from another era. Once you got into the 40s and the World War II era, John Carradine became their drag because he had more cred. He was a little bit more of a, you know, traditional solid actor of that type. So Lugosi had to go crazy to get the part in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, just the way he had a campaign to do the role originally in 1931.
When he came back in Abbott and Costello, you go, oh, shit, this is what's been missing. From Dracula.
I like Carradine, but like Len Strange, he's second string.
Yes, yes.
And the only reason they even let Lugosi do it in A&C Meet Frankenstein, because that was a parody.
I know.
So they thought, oh, this hammy, melodramatic.
It's
okay.
A shame the way he was treated.
And he almost didn't get that either. He had to go crazy to get it. Can you imagine?
He was good in Abbott and Costello.
Oh,
He was perfect.
And those lines, and he's talking to Lou Costello, you know, and they're doing their, what the world needs is young brains and blood, or whatever he's saying, you know, and then Lou Costello was going, thank you.
Two quick bits of trivia before we move off Son of Frankenstein and move to my last one, and yes, you're ahead of me. Sarah Karloff, who did this show, was born during production.
Oh.
She was born in November of 1938. And again, this could be bullshit. We'll have to ask Sarah. Apparently, he went to the hospital in the costume.
I have heard that many times.
Hope it's true.
I heard that story. It sounds like bullshit.
Imagine those poor people in the hospital.
And the question that, of course, you both know, it's his last feature. It's Karloff's last feature as the monster. But for what reason did he put the makeup on again?
Oh, you mean the classic episode of Route 66?
Yes.
Yes, Lizard's Leg and Alice. Yeah, yeah,
no,
that was...
No messing with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they all were in it. You had...
Janie and Laurie.
I knew Gilbert knew it.
Jumped in. I mean, you know, Lugosi was gone.
Well, this is my tragic childhood story. I would check every day. Route 66
to see
was
if
on.
That one would pop
I would
up.
Check every day if that would pop up. And the one day I don't check.
Isn't that always the way it is?
Yes.
Jesus.
By the way, he also put on the makeup for a charity softball game.
Oh, yes, yes.
I do believe...
Or baseball.
I do believe he put the makeup on again for the Danny Kaye movie, Walter Mitty.
Yeah, but it's not... But
it was a sequence that they filmed
right,
and didn't use.
Not in the movie.
It's not in the movie, but it would have been... Technicolor that you wouldn't have seen.
How
that,
about that?
And apparently,
oh,
that,
here's the other
you
thing.
You had to wait till Munster go home
right?
to see them in color.
Here's the other thing that drives me crazy. In real life, to have them look gray on screen, yeah. they painted them green, and now they always just have Frankenstein as a green monster, and it shouldn't be that way.
Okay, this is the best. As I understand, and this has become an issue among us people who are into this, the true correct color for the Frankenstein monster's skin is that grayish color.
Yes.
And that is what was originally created. That's what you will always see. In this Walter Mitty thing that was in Technicolor,
yeah.
it was the gray look again. But when they were doing those color tests and things on Son of Frankenstein, you will see some of this footage. I believe Karloff was on the set taking home movies, and you will see that somewhat greenish look to his face and with the red outfit and all that. I believe they were experimenting a little since that first movie was going to be made in color, Son of Frankenstein, their first Technicolor movie. They wanted to play with his skin tone a little to make it a little more interesting. That's my thought on it. But basically, it should be that grayish look. The reason it went green is the same reason the Incredible Hulk started out as gray in the comics. It didn't print right. It didn't look
yeah.
good.
Oh,
so
interesting.
They went green.
Oh, it's interesting.
And that jumped out at you. Also, you know, the Universal Monsters for kids of my generation and in the 60s and then later in the 70s and whatever, it was the Aurora Monster model kits.
Yes,
just
yes.
talked
and,
about
and,
them.
And the cover of that, James Baum's beautiful painting for the box art, the monster's green. And that's what they told you to paint it. And from that point on,
of course.
He just was green.
Of course. Let's talk about the Wolfman before we get,
yes.
before
wonderful
we get
film.
Out of here. You would, as you say, now we're up to 41. So mm-hmm. we started at 31. It's a 10-year span, and you, as you pointed out, Universal had struck out with Werewolf of London
right.
in 1935, despite having Warner Oland in it.
And it's an interesting story, too, because there are two werewolves in Werewolf of London.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's offbeat, but didn't quite nail
Kurt Siodmak, who had mm-hmm. something of had a terrific career. He wrote I Walk with a Zombie, wrote Son of Dracula, Black
Very
Friday,
talented guy.
Many other movies. Put together a script in a couple of weeks. It's an original screenplay. Chaney became a star.
Mm-hmm. And I think the original, and there are traces of it in the movie, that originally it's supposed to be that you weren't supposed to know whether he actually was a werewolf or not.
A very good point. You watch the movie and you listen to the dialogue and everything. It sounds like that's what they're doing, that you shouldn't really know. And meanwhile, we're seeing him. It's
yes,
a beautiful
yeah.
night. We're seeing clear as day and everything. Okay, Siodmak later made a movie called Bride of the Gorilla.
Sure,
which
we talked
was,
about it.
Which
yes,
was
that
his
was the
vision.
Wolfman.
And the idea is it's only when you see him in a mirror or in a pool of water from his point of view, because he's imagining that, but that's not what it's a Val Lewton thing.
And
we're
the
talking
funny
about.
Thing is, Lon Chaney is in that, but not
yes,
in the lead role.
Yes, but that is what the original idea was. And that's why Val Lewton made Cat People. He said, oh, this Wolfman thing, you see too much. This is how it really should be. And that was when the whole idea
of
implying
intriguing.
That. Yeah, Cat People was his answer to the Wolfman.
Well, Siodmak escaped from the Nazis,
yeah.
So he
yeah.
saw a lot of himself in this story.
He,
forced into a fate I didn't want, he said.
Right, right.
Yeah,
mm.
and it's like, you know, even a man who's pure at heart and says his
right.
prayers at night. So he was
exactly.
an honest, good guy,
mm-hmm.
but he became
It shows you what anyone
animal.
Can become. And that's a great subtext. The other thing I want to say about The Wolfman, and I didn't even get into this in the book because there's so many good things you could say about the film, but you know what that story's really about? It's a father and son story, and it's about what happens if you don't show your child love.
You know what?
It turns your child into a monster without having that love.
You know what I think the movie is too? Aside from that analogy of like a Jew come in, it's like it was the thing of like it was thrust on him became. I also think it's almost like a biography of Lon Chaney Jr.
Take the words right, because I was about to say,
well,
in real life, his own father was a cold fish with him.
Symmetry.
And if you look at that movie, it's almost about Lon Chaney Jr.'s relationship with his real dad.
Yes.
Key moment in the movie, at the end of the picture, when he's got him strapped to the chair at the end.
Yes.
And he says, but Dad, aren't you going to stay here with me to help me through this seizure? Oh, no, I have to go help the villagers.
Yes.
That was it. God damn it, stay with your son.
Yes.
He needs you. He wouldn't have changed if he had stayed.
Yes.
Hammer picked that up in Curse of the Werewolf with Oliver Reed,
yeah,
where the girl he loves stays with him.
Like that
and
one.
He doesn't change.
Yeah, I like that
because
one.
Because the power of love was able to stop that transformation.
Okay, Gilbert, no one will appreciate this more than Gary. Tell him your universal monster.
Oh, okay.
Psychological theory.
Frankenstein is a baby. He's confused. He just wants to be loved and accepted. Everything, he's just been thrown into this life. The Wolfman is adolescence. Your body, your voice, everything is changing, and you have no control over it. Dracula is what every guy wants to be. You want to control women.
Right.
You want to be charming.
They keep going. The mummy is how we wind up.
The mummy is old age.
But wow. I never thought of Universal Monsters takes you through all
the stages. He's profound, this guy that says
that. That's great.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, I particularly like that Wolfman and the adolescence and the changes.
Well,
that you
I mean, they made I Was a Teenage Werewolf.
Well, right,
I
mean, that's literally
and Teen Wolf. I mean, and they also did did it as a comedy.
Kind of nailed that, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, he's a deep thinker.
But you want to know something?
If it's stuff you don't need to know about.
But here's the stuff. All very funny and everything, but these movies were so good, they stimulate thoughts like that. You know,
yeah,
and it's interesting. And the actors kind of knew. I mean, Karloff knew he was doing an innocent.
They're gems.
Thrust into this crazy world.
And I think Kurt Siodemach, because it was supposed to be an identical story. It's like, you know, here this guy had this fate thrust on him. And with Siodemach, you know, his life changed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, but I heard that he used to go out, he had a big garden. And he would go out every morning and yell out, "Thank you, Hitler."
Wow.
Yikes.
Wow. Tell people where they can get the books. Now, this is one of four that you did in a series.
That fantastic press group there. It's the first one was the top 100 horror movies. The second one was the top 100 sci-fi movies. The third is the top 100 fantasy movies. And then the last one was the top 100 comic book movies, which was dated the minute it came out,
right.
Obviously.
Right, of course.
But for years and years, it would always be horror, sci-fi, and fantasy with the three aspects of fantastic cinema. Now we have to include comic book fantasy because it looms so large.
And people can get these books on Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
They can get your wonderful Bible, which we've plugged before, Fantastic Television.
Yeah, that's still out there.
Which is still out
there. And then there's still the original Bible.
You still get that,
which
too.
Which is good, too.
There's some... Hey, listen, in the I was once I actually tried to sell a series called The Greatest Horror Stories of the Bible because there's possession stories, there are monster stories. It's true.
Yes. Gary, this is fun. This is the perfect,
the perfect
Halloween show. We thank you.
I feel like I'm with my old friends just hanging out, you know.
And we'll come back and we'll do something else. I made another list, by the way. We'll do it for another show of more obscure Universal horror films.
Listen, we could go on forever.
And we could go on and on forever.
And we haven't even gotten to the 50s.
Gary brought us a very old issue of the Monster Times. What is the year on that?
God, this was about 72. It was my first professional writing.
Fantastic.
I started my career as a writer by being the creature from the Black Lagoon in an article that was an autobiographical article. So I actually got to be one of my favorite Universal monsters. And that's what started my writing career.
Hey, Rico Browning's still around. Think he'd be up for an interview?
Wow, that would be cool, wouldn't it? Ben Chapman, who's the other actor, has left us now.
Yes, he left us.
Because he played the creature on land, recruited the swimming.
And the actress, the leading
Julie Adams.
We just lost her. We missed that. That was an opportunity missed.
I believe Laurie Nelson is still around. She was the leading lady in Revenge of the Creature.
Give us a list. We got to get these people on the show.
Sure.
Gilbert loves this stuff.
Yes.
As you can see. Perfect Halloween show. Thanks, Gare.
Hey, listen, I'm in town, and why not? Why don't I just stop by and do this stuff?
I'm Gilbert Gottfried.
But you're right. You're mentioning you got to do a Val Lewton show.
We will.
All this other stuff.
We will.
I'm Gilbert Gottfried, and I've been sitting here with my co-host, Frank Fontobaldry. And this has been Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions.
Not bad.
Damn good.
Thanks, Gare.
My pleasure.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Same to you. We'll be right back.